Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight, and it's Thursday, January the 9th, 2014, and here are our top stories.
Tonight, the Pentagon admits to stockpiling potassium iodide due to Fukushima. A Ford exec promises not to share the data they collect on you. And we sit down with a concerned West Coaster who has kept a close eye on Plumegate. All this and more on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, our own Kit Daniels began looking into Pentagon requisitions, and he found out that the Pentagon admitted that they started stockpiling potassium iodide as protection against Fukushima. This is what he found. He said a federal bid notice revealed that a Pentagon agency began stockpiling potassium iodide in 2012 due to its concerns over Fukushima nuclear crisis, shedding light on why the Department of Health and Human Services is now ordering 14 million doses of iodide. The Defense Logistics Agency posted a solicitation on FedBiz Ops in 2012 asking contractors for 75,000 packages of potassium iodide tablets. Now, this is the reason they gave. Because of recent earthquake in Japan in March of 2011 and the resultant nuclear crisis has renewed interest in this item. And they went on to say that the U.S. Army Medical Material Agency has submitted a requisition for this item to ensure that critical operational forces are protected in the event of nuclear fallout. And so then the question comes back to this large solicitation that just came out that Paul Joseph Watson noticed in the FedBiz Ops publications of 14 million doses in 1 month wanted by the Department of Health and Human Services. Why would they wait until now? Well, it's because oceanographers have pointed out that they expect that the radioactive plume working its way across the ocean will be arriving on the west coast of the U.S. about this time this year. And that's the reason that our crew is in California, taking readings and reporting on what the mainstream media will not report on. And yet, Arianna Huffington thinks that the elite are not getting their message out. She's worried that Bill Gates and others just aren't able to communicate what they want to communicate with you. So she is going to court the global elite in an effort to undermine alternative media. This is from a story by Kurt Nemo. And he says that this new site that she's creating, this new news organization, will exploit unpaid citizen journalists who will serve as bunting on a stage. That's a great phrase, kind of like window dressing. Dominated by the likes of former British Prime Minister Tony Blair, Microsoft's Bill Gates, and Google's Eric Schmidt. She said, you can have all of those heads of state and major business people, et cetera, writing right next to an unemployed man from Spain. Yeah, that's right. And a student from Brazil. And she's not going to pay the unemployed man from Spain or the student from Brazil. She said, the great heart of Huffington Post is that there is no hierarchy. I wonder if she could say that with a straight face. There's not really going to be any hierarchy, and yet you have people like Bill Gates and Tony Blair that are going to be writing articles there. Of course, they don't need to be paid, but they've already got plenty of mouthpieces in the mainstream media, but they're looking to try to rebrand themselves. They want to pretend that they're the new alternative media because, quite frankly, the old media is losing its credibility at a rapidly increasing pace. Look at this story that came out. Now, if you remember a couple of weeks ago on CBS 60 Minutes, John Miller, a reporter there, interviewed Keith Alexander from the NSA. And he asked him one softball question after the other, never followed up on anything. And everybody criticized him for that, especially since John Miller had been working for law enforcement before he went to CBS. And everybody suspected that he was going to be going back to work for law enforcement at the New York Police Department shortly thereafter, which he subsequently did. This is what he said today. He went back and Charlie Rose talked to him and said, boy, we really miss you, John Miller. And he asked him if he felt more like a journalist or like a law enforcement official in his heart. And Miller responded that he was an intelligence officer and that there was, quote, almost no difference between the two jobs since they both dealt with a collection and the analysis of facts. Well, he really wasn't too interested in collecting and analyzing facts when he interviewed Keith Alexander. But listen to what else he had to say here. He says, you become a briefer. You tell your boss, here's the bottom line, here's the potential responses. That's kind of what you all do. Really? Because when he interviewed Keith Alexander, one of the things that Paul Joseph Watson pointed out when he covered that story was that various times during that interview, Keith Alexander had to stop and say, refer back to these men that were behind him in the shadows, men who were not identified, to see what he could say about that, if he could address something like that. So even Keith Alexander, the head of the NSA, was answering to some shadow government that was over him. So I don't think that the information is flowing up from people like John Miller. I think it's actually flowing down from these guys that are standing in the shadow. John Miller is there just to manufacture consent. And these people at the bottom are there just to collect data. Seems like everybody is collecting data on you, including now we find out your Ford motor vehicle. This was from the Consumer Electronics Show. They had a privacy panel. And the executive, who is actually a sales and marketing executive, if you can believe this, said, "We know everyone who breaks the law. We know when you're doing it. We have GPS in your car, so we know what you're doing. By the way, we don't supply that data to anyone." Do you really believe that? I mean, here this guy comes across like he's, I guess he sounds enough like Santa Claus that you're still going to buy his cars. That's not really anything to brag about. I don't know if they're manufacturing cars or if they're trying to manufacture consent. Are they working like everybody else to collect information? Because that information that's being stored now, that he's bragging about your vehicle storing on you, is something that will easily be turned over whenever the government asks for it. A third party like Ford Motor Company is not going to protect your privacy. They have no interest in protecting your privacy. When the government threatens them or even politely asks them, they will, to curry favor with the government or to avoid penalties, turn over anything and everything they have on you. And that means that they're going to use that to tax you. They're going to use it to harass you. They're going to use it as a pretense to raise your insurance rates to the points where you're not going to be able to drive anymore. You're going to have a self-driving new brand new car from Ford Motor Company, because otherwise it's going to be too expensive and all the traffic tickets that you get. Now, this kind of reminds me of a phrase. They sent out swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Remember where that came from? That was from the Declaration of Independence. It looks like today what's happening, and it looks like we need another Declaration of Independence. Now, in more NSA news, if you remember, Larry Klayman had an impressive win at a court. We had an honest judge, District Judge Leon, ruled that the NSA was, in fact, violating the Fourth Amendment, and anybody who reads the Fourth Amendment knows that they're violating that Fourth Amendment. The government very quickly came out with another district judge who contravened that decision, came up with a contradictory decision on that to kind of check that. And now they've taken it one step further. The Obama administration has filed a motion with Judge Leon, who said that this was against the Fourth Amendment, to stay any discovery that Larry Klayman might get by looking at NSA documents. And this is what they said. Even if the mere collection of information about plaintiff's communications constitutes a Fourth Amendment search, conclusively resolving the reasonableness of that search ultimately could risk or require disclosure of exceptionally sensitive and classified intelligence information regarding the nature and scope of the international terrorist threat to the United States and the role of the NSA's intelligence gathering activities have played meeting that threat. Well, look at the very beginning of that. They say even if the mere collection of information, that's what the Fourth Amendment is there to keep from happening, is to make sure that you're going to be have privacy in your person, in your place, and in your papers. Look at the definition of what unreasonable is. You know, we see these words change over centuries, over decades, whatever. We see that they gradually migrate. What is now considered to be unreasonable, the definition is something like not fair or inappropriate, you know, burdensome, something like that. But I think it really clearly means that they don't have a reason. If you look at the text, they have clauses there. Look at the definition of reason. Reason means that you have a cause, an explanation, or a justification for an action or event. And that's what the Fourth Amendment is saying. It says you will not have unreasonable searches. In other words, you won't have a search without a cause. Why? Because they say you have to have probable cause. And they say that you won't have it without justification or explanation. Why? Because it says it has to be supported by an oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched. In other words, you have to have a reason to search it, you have to explain it, and there are limitations on what you can search, what you can grab, what you can collect. They play these word games with us, and we need to not let them continue to do that. Even to the extent that when William Binney talked to us, he said that they consider that it's not information that they've collected unless an NSA officer actually looks at it. So they can collect and store that information, and then they can pass it on to the FBI or Homeland Security. They don't consider that information to have been collected, even though they were the ones who collected, they were the ones who stored it, they were the ones who passed it on. So they play these semantic games with us. But look at this ruling now. This is a good ruling. This came from a federal judge in Chicago. A little bit of history. If you remember the Heller versus DC ruling that went back to 2008, and that set the heart of the controversy of what's going on in the Washington DC laws. That goes back to the Adam Kokesh issue where they said that you could not have a loaded gun in Washington DC. Heller versus DC established that the Second Amendment is about an individual right to keep and bear arms. Now, of course, you know that from the preamble to the Bill of Rights. You know that from looking at the context of all the Bill of Rights, that they're about individual rights. They're not setting aside rights for some kind of a National Guard that came about quite a bit after that. They're about individual rights. And that's what the Supreme Court held in Heller versus DC. But then, of course, they pushed back and they said, well, that was a federal jurisdiction, so it doesn't apply in the states. Then 2 years later, McDonald versus Chicago established the fact that an individual right to keep and bear arms applied outside of federal jurisdictions. But the city of Chicago didn't like that, and so this is what they did. They enacted one of the most draconian gun control laws in the city's history. They allowed for ownership permits to be issued, but only if you took training at shooting ranges. But guess what? They banned the shooting ranges. They also required every gun to be registered, 5 hours of training, penalties for transporting legally owned firearms, possession of firearms only inside your owner's residence when you had to have the guns locked inside your residence, a ban on laser sights, and even banning real firearms on movie and TV sets. This is what's meant by infringement. You couldn't get a better definition of this or better example of infringement. And so this was struck down by a judge. This is a judge that was appointed by Obama. And this is what he had to say. The right to keep and bear arms is a right to acquire a firearm. Wouldn't you think so? Same as ammunition. Ammunition is also included in that. That's their strategy now, is to cut off ammunition. Well, that's it for our news tonight. But right after the break, we're going to have Jenny McCarthy has some choice words for pro-vaccine bullies. And following that, we have an interview with someone who's been following the Fukushima disaster from the very beginning. And he has some interesting insights about bioaccumulation, as well as something people are calling Plumegate. Stay tuned.
Symbols are powerful, and the globalists have hijacked the symbols of America. They've turned them into their own symbols. Well, we are restoring the idea of the true republic, not the counterfeit globalist empire, by promoting the icon George Washington and others. That's why we're rolling out an 100% made in America line of incredible pro-liberty apparel. We are repopularizing liberty. We are helping fellow Americans rediscover what made this country great. We are the spirit of 1776. We are 1776 worldwide. We are all brothers and sisters in arms in the animating contest of liberty in the long march towards humanity's ultimate destiny of freedom. Visit madein1776.com today and vote with your dollars to promote truly made in America, high quality products, and promote the ideals of liberty. Alex Jones here to tell you about how you can help spread liberty worldwide while also enjoying what I have found to be the best tasting 100% organic coffee on the planet. For more than a decade, my favorite coffee has come from the high mountains of southern Mexico, where the Chiapas farmers grow their unique shade-grown Arabica beans. We have now managed to secure these sought-after beans in a highly customized blend. Discover and try a bag of the Patriot Blend 100% organic coffee at InfoWarsLife.com. This coffee gives you a long, smooth pick-me-up for hours without the headaches and heartburn that so many other coffees give me personally. Hands down, this is my favorite coffee, and it's taken us years to secure connections directly to the Chiapas Mexican farmers. Drop by the site today, order a bag or two, and I don't think you're going to be disappointed. Available in original or with our immune support infusion blend, you will be supporting a free press, all the while enjoying a truly great-tasting cup of my favorite coffee. Available at InfoWarsLife.com.
Jenny McCarthy furiously slams rumors that she claimed her autistic son, Evan, may have been misdiagnosed. The View co-host tweeted, "Stories circulating online claiming that I said my son, Evan, may not have autism after all are blatantly inaccurate and completely ridiculous." McCarthy has been outspoken about her son's condition for years, and she's been under fire for her outspoken view on the role vaccines play in triggering autism. Now, Jenny McCarthy asserts that she's not against vaccines. She just encourages that parents slow it down a bit and educate themselves first. So what's so wrong with that? Just what are parents discovering when they do a little vaccine research? They may find that most seasonal flu vaccines contain dangerous levels of mercury in the form of thimerosal. Mercury is a known neurotoxin associated with long-term immune, sensory, neurological, motor, and behavioral dysfunctions. Why would a parent expose their child to potential brain damage just to get a seasonal flu vaccine? The CDC was busted by CBS News in 2009 for declaring a fake H1N1 pandemic that cost the U.S. billions. And worse, the CDC put pregnant women first in line for an untested vaccine. The number of vaccine-related fetal demise reports increased by 2,440% in 2009 compared to previous years. This is even more shocking than the miscarriage statistic, a 700% increase. And there are many other cases that will support the theory that vaccines actually cause the diseases that they're meant to prevent, much like the Bill Gates polio vaccine program in India, which caused 47,500 cases of paralysis and death in 2011 alone. And a new study published in the journal Vaccine has linked multiple infant vaccines to an increased rate of infant mortality. A doctor in the UK recently filed a Freedom of Information Act, and he received 30 years worth of secret official documents. You can read the full 45-page report for yourself online, but the five key points reveal that government experts have known vaccines don't work, known they cause the diseases they're supposed to prevent, known they are a hazard to children, colluded to lie to the public, and worked to prevent safety studies. And when most people use a pharmaceutical product, they assume that it's been independently tested and found to be safe and effective before it hits the marketplace. But that's just not the case. We've all heard of the revolving door between government and big pharma, but many of the reports in medical journals, which doctors rely on to reach opinions about new pharmaceutical products, are written by people with financial links to drug companies. And in some cases, reports are even being ghostwritten by people employed by big pharma. But the threat to the lives of the American people doesn't stop with big pharma cooking their books.
Gates is trying to have all the vaccines in the food now where you can't get away from it.
They're called edible vaccines. They have them. The hepatitis B vaccine, they've been working on that one for a while to introduce that into Africa in carrots and in potatoes. Gates has been working for a while at this whole concept of a malaria vaccine with mosquitoes, delivering by mosquitoes. Now, what if you get bit 10 times? Does that mean you get 10 doses of the vaccine? I mean, it's just insanity.
Clearly, corporate interests play a much bigger role in the vaccination program than the government's concern for children. That's why it's important for us to use our intuition and do a little research for ourselves. The belief that vaccines are safe and effective comes from mass marketing and media. But luckily for parents, the vaccine hoax is over.
My friends, Alex Jones here to tell you about some of the most important information concerning you and your family's health. Radiation levels have more than doubled in the last 60 years in the Northern Hemisphere from all of the nuclear testing and radiological accidents. Radioactive contamination is now in most of the food supply. There's only two ways to avoid this. Move south of the equator or properly protect your thyroid with Nascent Iodine. Looking to protect my family, I've done deep research. Nascent Iodine is the purest, cleanest, absolute best form of iodine to protect yourself and your family. It's made right here in the USA, completely non-GMO. I searched out the best quality and now have developed a double-strength form of Nascent Iodine, exclusively available at InfoWarsLife.com. Nascent Iodine is on record as one of the only safe ways to detox from fluoride poisoning. Survival Shield Nascent Iodine. Secure your super high-quality Nascent Iodine today at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com. Introducing Pro One. All of your filtration in one system, portable, on the go. No more do you have two or three filters to just reduce sodium fluoride. You have a system that cuts out the sodium fluoride and up to 95% of hydrofluorosilicic acid. Advanced manufacturing technology combines silver impregnated white ceramic with new Aquametics advanced media for removal of fluoride and other heavy metals, all in one filter element. It is the only one that does it, and out of the gate, We have it discounted at 10% off with promo code WATER. This is the only system that in one unit helps reduce or remove pesticides, herbicides, chloramines, ammonia, and chlorine, hydrofluorosilicic acid, the most common form of fluoride not covered by other fluoride filter brands, and sodium hexafluorosilicate. Get your Pro Pure with the new Pro One filter today at InfoWarsStore.com or by calling 888-253-3139.
Well, the other day, as Alex Jones was talking about Fukushima, he took a call from Drew Lamb. Now, Drew Lamb had some very interesting things to say, and we wanted to give him time to talk about that in a little bit more detail. So we've got him on Skype right now. Drew, welcome.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
Doing good. Now, one of the things I thought was really interesting was how you got involved with this, why you were concerned about this, your friend who works at the Hanford Nuclear Power Plant. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit. I got into this because a friend of mine alerted me that we might get some fallout from the Fukushima meltdown that was happening in March of 2011. And he had reminded me of the Japanese fugos, or the fire bombs that were floated over the Pacific Ocean during World War II. And some of them had landed in the Pacific Northwest, and at least one had landed in my hometown of Medford, Oregon, just a few miles from where I currently live, and it had blown up on a vacant lot. So we had theorized that it was likely that we would get some fallout, especially after Unit 3 detonated. So a friend of mine put me in contact with a gentleman who was working up at Hanford in Washington handling nuclear waste. And I was talking to him about the event, and he told me that they were very concerned about the MOX fuel reactor, Unit 3. And he told me that they didn't think that the material was going to travel, but they were worried that it was going to blow up. And he had told me that because of the culture at TEPCO, that it was likely that they would try to cover it up, that they would lie, and it would be very difficult to get information out of there about what was really truly going on. And so we were talking some more about radioactive fallout, and he had disclosed to me that during a routine checkup at his work that they had learned that he had cesium-137 in his body. And of course they had to do an investigation to figure out how this had happened. You know, was there, did a container leak, and was he exposed to something there at the reservation, or what happened? How did he get this? So, they were able to determine that the cesium-137 had originated from the Chernobyl explosion that took place in the mid-80s. I believe that was 1986. And so they had to figure out, well, how did he get Chernobyl cesium-137 inside of him? He didn't work over there, obviously, and they didn't handle nuclear waste from Chernobyl. And so they did some research, and they put two and two together, and they figured that he had ingested cesium-137 when he consumed elk meat from an elk that he had killed in Oregon. And apparently that elk might have been grazing on grass that had phytoextracted cesium-137 from the soil. And that cesium-137 got there because it rained. And so after he told me this, I decided to research the Chernobyl event some more. And what I'd learned was that the radiation from the Chernobyl explosion was spread through rain and snow, and was concentrated in mountains, and especially in valley areas, you know, where water would flow, of course. Mm-hmm. And so that made me realize that this material could travel, that it would travel in water vapor. And we live right at the foot of the Western Cascades here. And so I figured that it was likely that we could get some material from Japan, from Fukushima. And so then I started figuring out, you know, how long would it take for this material to travel? And my friends and I were studying jet stream models, trying to calculate wind speeds at various altitudes to determine how long it would take for the material to get here. we had estimated that it would take about 3 to 4 days to travel. And depending upon the jet stream overlay, that material would come over either here or wherever the jet stream was. Also during that time, there was a pressure system that started shoving the jet stream south, and we were expecting to get some initial fallout from the meltdowns, and the jet stream got shoved down toward California, Central California, then Southern California and Northern Mexico. And so it was blowing down there during the early days of the meltdown.
Hmm. Yeah, so, that's interesting. You know, when you're talking about your friend who got cesium-137 from Chernobyl, we've typically thought about that really primarily affecting Western Europe because of the way the winds are blowing. So all it needs is a carrier mechanism because these radioactive substances have very long half-life from these nuclear reactors. So it's just, and it can continue to propagate through the food chain. And that's what we're concerned about when we see this happening in the Pacific. Even though the radiation itself, some of the radioactive water may be diluted as it moves across the Pacific Ocean, it's still being consumed by plankton at perhaps a very high concentration level and then moving its way up the food chain, just like we saw in the friend of yours who was working at the Hanford nuclear power plant. And the interesting thing is that they found it only because they were monitoring him at a nuclear power plant. Typically, we're not looking for this kind of stuff.
Right. So what you're talking about is bioaccumulation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it works its way up the food chain, and with mammals, material like cesium-137 builds up in the muscle tissue. I'm not an expert on this. I'm just what you guys call a citizen journalist. However, I consider myself a citizen of the world. I'm not an expert. I'm not a scientist. I'm more of a businessman than anything else. But I like to survive.
Yeah,
and I realized
right.
that, you know, we have a lot of issues that we're dealing with right now.
Let's just talk. We're almost out of time, but I wanted to hit on Plumegate and talk about some of the readings that were initially seen that then kind of disappeared, and just briefly mention the unusual explanation that the EPA gave about some of these readings.
Well, we were trying to see what the radiation counts were along the West Coast, and EPA has a network of sensors. It's called the RadNet, and on the West Coast, they have something like 11 monitors. And at the time when Fukushima started melting down, only 4 of those monitors was functioning. One of them is in Corvallis, Oregon, up in northwestern Oregon. So you could get on the EPA's website and pull up the data and look at charts and sort the information in different ways. We were seeing really high beta counts between March and June of 2011, and startling high, you know, up in the hundreds. And so that data ended up being scrubbed. It was just flatlined. and I went back to look at the tool again and to see what the levels were. And there was a message up there saying that the data was faulty due to radio frequency interference.
Radio frequency interference. Radio waves.
It's a completely ridiculous excuse.
Yeah, radio waves have absolutely nothing to do with radiation, ionizing radiation that we see from nuclear events.
Even if you're dealing with microwaves, you're talking non-ionizing radiation.
That's right. That's right.
And so it's just a ridiculous excuse. Now, if you jump down to the RadNet down in Bakersfield, that was showing very high counts as well. If I recall, it was showing counts over 800 CPMs of beta radiation. So I went to the grocery store and I bought a bunch of vegetables that came out of the California salad bowl and also some vegetables that came out of northern Mexico shortly after this event started and the jet stream was blowing over that area. And I went home and I started testing them with my Geiger counter.
Wow, and we're out of time. I wish we had more time, but that's a fascinating report. And, you know, it's exactly what we need to see is people taking responsibility for their own life, not relying on the government to tell us what's wrong, even relying on the government to even look at it. When they look at it, they'll go back and fudge the data if they think that it's not in their interest to put that information out. Thank you so much, Drew, for doing that. Thank you for calling in. We really appreciate you. And it is vitally important that everyone take responsibility for their own lives and that we pass this information around. Thank you so much for passing that on.
Thanks for having me, David.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, I wish we had more time to talk to Drew. If you want to get more information from his website, it's FukushimaFacts.com. And Drew is a great example of somebody who takes control of their life, who educates themselves, and then turns around and educates others. That's what we're all about. That's what we want you to be about. That's what the authentic alternative media really is about. And if you want to educate your friends and family, one of the great ways to do that is to support our operation here at Prison Planet TV. You can share your subscription with up to 10 other friends at the same time. And right now we have a New Year's special. If you get an annual subscription, you get 5 months for free. Well, that's it for tonight. We'll be back tomorrow at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.